quick recap. The Bears were in control. The Bears were in control all morning. Fed, pump and pow, does what he does best. The Bulls came fighting back. But the Bears came back swinging. And we're basically in the same place that we were at yesterday's open, maybe just a tad higher. It's a tug of war in the markets. I don't think earnings reports from today are going to get us out of it, but there's a lot of interesting ones, and we're going to let you guys pick and choose which ones we cover. Talking commodities at 8:35 with Greg Weldon of Weldon Online. It's Thursday. Let's figure this market out on Pre-Market Prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
Up and down and all around, up 33 handles at 50.79.50. The buck pulling back under 106, down a penny at 105.61. TLT, quiet yesterday, but slightly in the green today at 88.68. Crude under 80, up 75 cents at 79.75. Gold just meandering, making a higher low, but down on the session still, 440, 2306.60. Silver down 26 cents at 26.46. And Bitcoin futures, little bit of a bounce, catching a bit off yesterday's low. It's up $1,470 at 58,820. Let's bring in Triple D. And Triple D, should we annoy everyone with a hockey update?
Yes, because the Oilers got to the second round last night. So, you know, I'm an Edmonton Oilers fan, and we advance. The Oilers advance with a 4-3 nail biter at the end. I tell you, Joel, this sports, you know, you lose life, years on your life watching the last few minutes of your game when your team's just hanging on. It's 4-2 throughout the third. They were in complete control. And then LA scores with 2 minutes left to make it 4-3. And I'm like, oh, nail biter. And then they get the puck. And then they pull the goalie. And then Derek Ryan, Oilers forward, breaks his stick. So it's basically a 6-on-4. And I'm sitting here, my heart's racing. And I'm like, holy, this is a nail biter here. But they did hold on for the victory, knock out the LA Kings for the third consecutive season, and they move on to play the winner of Nashville, Vancouver. That's your Oilers update.
And you know, they say, as big a sports fan as I am, that you have, I acknowledge, everybody acknowledged, like, there's nothing more exciting than the seventh game of a Stanley Cup in overtime, right? Crazy. That just, yeah, that the intensity. Hopefully the Wings will get the playoffs next year. Let's bring in our reliable AB. AB, how you doing today?
I am good. It's a nice Thursday here in Detroit. We've got a lot to talk about. And Dennis, I had Oilers -1.5 last night in a parlay with Stars money line.
Oh, so the 2 minute cost, goal cost you.
And I've had a slew of just bad beats in betting this week.
That was a bad beat.
I had a parlay earlier this week where I had the Knicks money line against the 76ers, and the Knicks were winning by 6 points with 30 seconds to go. And Tyrese Maxey, the guard on the 76ers, had a 4-point play. So hit a three and got fouled on it. And then hit another three to tie the game with like 3 seconds to go. And I was like, oh, if I could have hedged that so easily, because the 76ers were probably like plus 1,500 or something. But I'm just like, all right, I don't know what I need to do, because all my bets will be looking good. And then at the last second, they rug pull me. Which is, you know, I mean, like,
what they do.
It's what they do. It's like what we're seeing in the markets right now.
What just they rug pull. There's your segue. There's your good segue and everything.
Let's talk about betting and stock market. Jay wants us to talk about the Derby. Jay wants.
We can do a Derby, a little Derby.
You will tomorrow. Joel will give us his annual preview. Joel always does a great, and we'll get Joel's picks there. So we always do
it. I got it down right
here. 10 years of pre-market prep. Joel has given us his Derby picks, so he will give you those tomorrow. So definitely tune in tomorrow. But wow, we got to talk about the Fed yesterday. Yeah, and the move.
Oh, yeah.
That was the segue, the rug pull of my bets going into the rug pull of the market yesterday. So as Joel mentioned at the beginning of the show, I mean, we were kind of trading lower throughout the day, a little slow day. And then all of a sudden, 2 p.m., we get that announcement. Rates are staying the same. The market starts getting a little bit of life. Powell starts talking at 2:30. He says, look, guys, I know some people out there are talking about rate hikes. We're not looking at that right now. The market takes off. And I mean, the S&P 500 went up like 1.5% from its lows the day. We've had a lot of volatility. If you were a bull, you were like, here we go, here we go, here we go. And then boom, just a sharp drop lower on the SPY. We fell 1.5% from the highs, got up to about 407 or 507 and a half, fell down to 500 flat by the close. So it was just another one of those days where everything was choppy. If you were fading whatever was going on, if you were buying when it was red and then selling when it was green, you had a pretty good day. But if you were just trying to, you know, ride the wave and, okay, we're down, so I'm going to buy puts, or we're up, so I'm going to buy calls, you got chewed up. But just, again, crazy day in the markets yesterday.
And he didn't say a thing. He didn't say a darn thing. You know, okay, rates aren't going up. We've been telling you rates aren't going up. Well, they can't take them down. Well, we knew we weren't going, you know, they weren't going down. This just going on and on and on about nothing.
So much.
I mean, do you got to give some credit to Gundlach? I mean, he was on when the market was tanking, but he was just kind of reiterating what Powell said. But that was a vicious break.
Gundlach isn't going to move the market like that. I'm not giving any credit to Gundlach for that sell-off. We are in, folks. What have we been saying on this show relentlessly? I feel like all year. It's been, at least not all year. The first quarter was obviously rah-rah, go AI. But in the last month, even, you know, even since March, you could argue the last 2 months, the fade trade is the play. And if you're chasing 80-point moves on the S&P, when Powell speaks, if you're chasing and saying, oh, it was 502 SPY, I've got to buy it at 508. If you're chasing these moves, stop trading. You're doing it backwards, folks. We are not in a momentum market right now. We are in a contrarian market. We are in a momentum market in January, February, and half of March. We topped out beginning of March. We've been pulling back, and now we've just been chopping around here for the last 4 weeks. So I think the chop continues. I mean, this is how market makers make a lot of money. They love this market. Back and forth, bid and ask, little run up, you know, we get full, a little sell off, we cover our shorts. It's a market maker's dream, the contrarian market. And that's what we're in here right now. And in normal markets are contrarian. I mean, we're so spoiled when, you know, a lot of retail traders started in 2020. They got this taste for the stock market when we were all locked in our homes and COVID was taking over and we were never going to leave our homes again. They all became day traders with their Robinhood accounts. And the stock market just went relentlessly higher. And you had Portnoy throwing darts at the wall. Those are not normal markets, folks.
Not at all.
Normal markets are choppy. Contrarian markets are very normal. Identifying what type of market you're in is the first step to success. Right now, we've been telling you for a long time here, we've been in a contrarian market. Fade trade. The fade trade by shorting rips, buying dips is really what has been working. And if you were doing that yesterday, you made a lot of money.
I did see also yesterday, I mean, we've had him on some Benzinga streams before. I don't know if he's ever been on this show, but Peter Schiff, of course, famed gold bug, always saying like, oh, things are so bad, you got to buy gold, you got to buy gold. Talking more about stagflation and calling out, Powell actually talked, if someone asked a question, he said, I don't see the stag or the flation. And
we had a joke.
Yeah, I know, a little jokey from Powell. But I have to agree here with Powell. I was reading some economists from over the weekend talking about, you know, why there, you know, we haven't really seen signs of stagflation yet. I know that word is being thrown out right now. We may start seeing some growth slow down, but we haven't seen really the economy start to falter in a way that would, you know, coincide with a stagflationary environment. So I think a little ahead of ourselves if you know, you're super worried about stagflation right now, because I do believe that once we do see like a legitimate and meaningful slowdown in spending or hiring and all these things, you will start to see that inflation come down a little bit. So I'd rather wait and see. And then if we start to see that slowdown and inflation not come down, then I'll be worried. But I don't think we've seen that yet based on the data that we have.
And we're just in an information gathering stage for the market here, too. I mean, this market wants to know if we're going to have any interest rate cuts this year or not. We don't know. And when you have not uncertainty, it equals more chop as well. I could see for the foreseeable future, even going into, you know, the next quarter here, you know, like looking into like July, summer months, we could just be in store for more chop. So you're taking your 2-4% gainers. You know, Tim Quast was saying that. You know, we respect Tim Quast very much for coming on the show for years. Completely agrees with us. We're in a contrarian market. He was calling it on Monday, you know, take your profits when you got them. And then and that's what we've seen, you know, this stock market. Thinks, oh, here we go. We're going back to all-time highs. No, we're not yet. Oh, we're going back to all-time highs. No, we're not yet. I mean, pull the rug on me once, you know, okay, well, that happens. Pull the rug on you 2-3 times, you've got to be identifying that's a pattern. So the rug pull yesterday, even you can credit Powell, you know, maybe was saying something about, you know, a little bit more hawkish maybe when they started asking comments and that tanked it. Sure. But it was also set up to want people to want to take the profits. So, you know, sometimes you can ignore when in a bull market, remember, they ignore all bad news, Joel. When you're just rip-roaring higher, you get bad news and the stock goes up anyways. We're not in that market right now. Information matters. And right now, this market is hungry to take profits.
But before we get to the earnings, Dennis, I just want to see if you still have your seatbelt fastened in Globe Life.
Do you want to talk about choppiness? You want to talk about choppiness? That thing was crazy. And I actually fully intended to buy more stock on that dip, but the dip didn't last long enough. So we were doing the show. You had the second short seller come out there. Stock goes down to $68, $69. I was like, I'll put some of that in my long-term account. But in my long-term account.
67.
Yeah, in my long-term account, I don't even look at that because I'm trading. I have a trading portfolio. I don't even look at my long-term account until well after 9:30 because I'm just too busy. I'm busy trading. And then I come in and I often. So my schedule is day trading from like 6:30 in the morning to like 10 o'clock. Okay, the day trading has stopped, you know, or at least slowed down. I'm kind of, you know, hedged or completely out of a lot of stuff. Usually, I'm usually out on my day trading account. And then I go to my long-term portfolio and I start looking at some charts. I start looking, do I want to do any adjustments? Do I want to, you know, and I fully intended, I even wrote it down that day to buy GL on that dip. Well, by the time I got to it at 10 o'clock, the stock was already back up. So people can say, well, why didn't you buy it in my trading account? Well, that's a babysitting stock for one thing. I can't sit there and watch GL. When you go into something highly, you know, momentum, like this is why I don't trade the earnings usually, you know, on the earnings. I trade ahead of them, but I don't trade on the print because you have to babysit those stocks. I can make money trading those stocks, but it's very time consuming. You have to really focus. When you're buying a stock that's in the news, you got to be watching it nonstop. If you're trading one stock, there's some very good one-stock traders. I'm not trading one stock. I often have 50-day trading positions on.
And hedges.
I can't be trading, you know, something that's going nuts. Or it has to be very small size that it's not meaningful and I'm not watching it then. But I can't just be focusing. And GL would be a trade you'd have to absolutely watch, at least that day when, you know, you got Fuzzy Panda, Sidekick, whoever it was, I don't remember their name, coming out and saying, yeah, it's all true. Fuzzy Panda's right. This thing's a big fraud. It was down for like 20 minutes. They bought it right back. They're not, you know, and maybe it is. Maybe they're right. You know, who knows? We don't know. I did sell half of it before that, you know, and you guys, you did ask
told me
last
that.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I bought 59 and 62, and then I sold half of it at 79 because I was up 35% on an insurance stock. In six trading sessions.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got to take some profits into that. That's just, you know, too much of a big move. I still think it could go back to $100. So I kept a little piece. I think it could. But, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe there's shenanigans. I don't know. I'm not an auditor. I can't go in there and tell you there's not shenanigans. But I feel like this was, you know, more, there's not as much meat as maybe they're letting on.
All right. Real quick. Before we get to some of the earnings breakdowns, I saw AH in the chat said, what number would you have to hit to retire and sit back on passive investments? And then Sam came in and said, you're on the wrong show. You know, people here are degens. You should be looking for a Vanguard show. But we can talk about this for a second, AH. So the rule of thumb is 4%. You can safely pull out 4% of whatever you have in your retirement account a year and not risk running out of money, at least for like 35 years. So say you had $1 million in an account, you could pull out $40,000 a year. So it all depends on your lifestyle. Like, you know, I think if you had, say, 2 million, you know, you're looking at 80,000, 3 million, you could pull out 120 a year. and not have to worry about running. So like you just use that math 4% and based on, you know, whatever you could get based on like treasury yields and investments, you should be safe. You know, 4% is pretty conservative, at least at how the market's been the past like 20 years. But you want to be conservative with your retirement projections because you don't want to set yourself up for a spot where, oh, my God, the market had a big down year, your investments didn't work out, and now you can't pull out any money, whatever. So just real quick, that's what I would say, but probably talk to a financial planner or someone to help you with that. But let's get to earnings. Joel, let's go to Qualcomm. I saw you had it pulled up first.
Sure.
Qualcomm reported yesterday after the close. EPS came in at $2.44, beat the $2.32 estimate. Sales came in at $9.4 billion, beat the $9.34 billion. Let's see the guidance. So it raised its dividend to 85 cents and issued Q3 guidance. Market liking it. I mean, we've talked about the high bar for a lot of these tech and chip stocks, but Qualcomm getting a bounce here this morning, trading up about 5.5%.
Still long it in the long-term portfolio. Look, people who say I can't hold stocks here. I've had this stock my long-term
for a long
portfolio.
Time. Yeah.
I don't even know what year I bought this. It was a Sean Udall pick. He came on our show and he said it's his favorite one. We got to get Sean back on. It's been a long time. He gave us some good ones. I think it was 2018. So I've had this in the long-term portfolio for 6 years. It doubled. I sold half because I'm like, I'm forever playing with the house's money and I never looked at it again. You know what? Stocks now tripled. So long-term investing sometimes works.
It was a big move. Who liked it earlier in the week? Wasn't it? Was it Ivan? Someone mentioned this stock.
Yeah. Ivan likes everything.
I think.
You know what? He's right. He's been right.
I know. I like Ivan.
I love Ivan.
Yeah, he's fun. Or what? I don't know if it was Chaykin or whatever.
Someone in the last like five show. You know,
I think it was Chaykin.
Was Chaykin on last week though?
Yeah, Chaykin did mention last week. And Merck's awesome. You know, Merck's been coming on the show for 6 years, 7 years too here. Merck's given us some great picks over the years.
You got a spike up to 173.77. Is that where you got a spike to? So you've leaked off that, but you're not too far. I see a red candle over here, and I'm going to focus on that red candle. That's at 174.38, a couple other highs in the 173, 174 area. You seem to be holding up pretty well here, so you want follow through the pre-market high. If I had to find two highs in the same area for a potential resistance, it would not be until 175.75. That splits a pair of highs from April 9th and April 11th. Coming back on the downside, you got a big gap to fill down to 169.5. So you'll need a pretty good retreat in the market to see that. But good report, good price action for Qualcomm.
All right, let's keep the earnings tape moving. We did say we were going to do some ticker time. So
we got to do Carvana.
Carvana, so, yeah.
So, I don't want to go to ticker time yet. I want to do Carvana here because this is just an enormous move. It's not a stock we would normally have near the top of the list, but when a stock goes up 35%, and that is exactly what is occurring here today, you got to respect it. And wow, I mean, from piss to bliss, this stock has just come back from the dead. Everybody had it buried, you know. It was looking at like bonds. Karen Feinerman was telling us how the bonds were trading at 30 cents on the dollar or something like that. This stock went to $3 in 2022. $3. Yeah, $3. Yeah. It's $118 here now. So obviously whoever was burying the stock, and I think I probably had it buried too. You know, a stock goes from 300 to 3, usually it continues its merry road to zero, or at least to the pennies. Not this stock. This is turned around. Unbelievable. Tell us about the numbers here, ABCVNA.
Yeah, and Carvana, I was just going to say, if memory serves correct, it was kind of like the demise of Carvana, or the supposed demise of Carvana, was kind of going on around the same time as Bed Bath & Beyond. And obviously, like, similar, you had a stock just crash and you're, you know, looking at potential bankruptcy, all this stuff. Usually, to your point, Dennis, the stocks don't come out of that. The companies don't survive. But Carvana did. In the recent quarter, EPS came in at 23 cents, which
beat, making money.
Yeah, and they were expected to have a 71-cent loss on EPS. Wow. A huge beat there. Sales came in at $3.06 billion, beat the $2.6 billion estimate. So, I mean, look, we've talked about like the car market hasn't been great right now, big ticket items. So maybe more people are going with used cars as opposed to buying a new car just because it's more expensive to finance a car right now. But either way, like very strong quarter for Carvana. And you just can't speak enough about this move from $3 to $119, up now more than 2,000% if you were buying in early 2023.
It's an incredible move. And you know what it brought? I would say Carvana brought a lot of other stocks, not all of them back from the dead, but a lot of other stocks back from the dead. We know you had the memesters in here, and this was the high short interest stock. And that's really what kind of kickstarted. This was going to be the short squeeze. You know, they started another short squeeze play and they brought it up from 3 to 10 to 20, and the short squeeze was going on. You know, now I think it's just like, you know, it's a turnaround story here to a certain extent, especially with this earnings report. So I'm not sure where the short interest is. You know, I don't really check that stuff closely. You know, the chat would probably know that. It says it's 30%. I don't know how updated that is, but it sounds like there's still some people short the stock. But I mean, they're getting hurt here today. Holy, what a move, Joel.
Nothing. I'm trying to, I drill down on the weeklies and the monthlies, and there's nothing until 134.68. I don't think that's going to come into play yet today. The initial surge, 122.90, that should be one of your targets. And then things have even thickened up this morning with sellers. You see, if you have someone hawking the 121 area. So if you do get a pop, if you're looking to like, if you have any calls, where did this thing close at? $87, your 90 all the way up to your 115s are in the money. Keep eye on that 121 area because you could get an options price off the open that the stock would even continue just a little bit higher, and it just won't. There's going to be they'll be taking a lot of juice off that open, but right now 121, I'd be looking at that ahead of the pre-market high.
Normally I don't chase, and I'm not saying I would chase this year either, but I wouldn't just blindly. So the set, you know, fade it all has been the trade, and you know, maybe that's a setup for Carvana, but you want to talk about having to babysit a stock. You go short this thing, you are absolutely going to have to babysit. And what I mean is you got to focus on that montage, watching everything. I mean, this is like going to, you know, it's trading kind of slower. And that's the nice thing about the pre-market. Sometimes things trade slower. It's going to trade crazy off the open. You know, when the real money comes in, it's going to, do they take profits right away? Do they squeeze the shorts more? Is there, you know, a fake out? Is it open high and then tank, or open and then go up and then come back through it, or open and gap up? But there's so many possibilities here. I'm just staying away from this one today.
I'm talking from the perspective if long, not, you know, as opposed to
if long, I just sell probably. Yeah, but I was sold long. Question is, does this ignite the short squeeze trade again, AB? Does this like get it kickstarted here a little bit? It's been pretty dead, that short squeeze trade, but now you get one of the old leaders, you know, gapping up 35%. Did they get in their gamesters, game GMEs trading up 1.65%? Do these stocks get a little hope for a day here again? I mean, those stocks have been in the gutter. I think there's that possibility. I'd be nervous to be short like a GameStop here right now. No position on it, but 1109 is where it's trading on the pre-market, just up slightly. Obviously, if they gap curve on up and it just, you know, tanks, then that's a different story. But if you gap and go, look out for those memester stocks, because
what's Bed Bath and Beyond now? What's the symbol?
It's off the market. It's like
Someone took it over. There's
maybe they took over some assets.
I'm not crazy on this one. Help me out, chat. Let's go to the chat.
Is there a way to trade Bed Bath and Beyond?
It's like BBYVI. Like there's like the, you know,
it's 27 symbols.
A BBYQ. I have a share of
Overstock took over the symbols.
Overstock
took over
the symbols.
What's the Overstock new? What's the Overstock new symbol?
I think it's Beyond now.
Beyonce.
BY. What's the symbol though? BYON? BYON?
Yeah.
I got to add that back into my system. Oh my gosh. Has that been a dog? Look at BYON. This stock has just went straight down. Yeah. So does it have a day here? Could, you know, you went from 35 to 19. Could you all of a sudden like get a little pop up, you know, get a 3-5% rally in some of these stocks? Maybe. I wouldn't want to be short them here when Carvana is going up like that. We'll just say that.
All right, we did get a little tip in the chat from Therapy Rob, and that's one way, you know, we said we were going to do ticker time, so throw some tickers in there.
Yeah, and ticker time attached with money gets more.
Yeah, that's one way to ensure we talk about your stock. So let's go to First Solar here. Let's see, did First Solar report? First Solar reported yesterday after the close. EPS came in at $2.20, beat the $1.97 estimate. Sales came in at $794 million, beat the $702 million estimate. So significant beat on sales there. Let's see, updated the fiscal year 2024 CapEx outlook. And you had a bunch of analysts coming in this morning. So Jefferies raises price target to 211. Mizuho raises price target to 209. Morgan Stanley raises price target to 248. Goldman raises price target to 268. So you're getting some analyst love this morning. Wow. Stock currently trading at 178. So clean energy stocks kind of been a dog, but First Solar has been one of the ones. But First Solar has been like one of the ones I think in this space that if you were going to take a stab, I'd be looking at First Solar or Enphase and not a lot of like the smaller ones. But Joel, what are we seeing on the charts here?
Oh boy, got a real big pop. Oh, she's nearly to 187. I'm just gonna say right now with three highs, man, let's go daily high here. Next target for me, true target, $5 away, 182.43. You want to stay green on this one? You close near the low of the session. So minor support, 77.58, 83.69. Perhaps get your offers out there. It's a consolidation here, really between 170 and 180, but pretty good spikes in there. So not a great feel on this one, though. On the weeklies is telling you this 183, 184 is huge. That's capped the stock in the last 3 weeks, including this week.
So the fade it all, fade everything title here of the show applies very much to this stock. It had the big pop. It popped $6, $7 on the initial earnings, but actually almost $10 on the initial earnings report. Then it gave it all back and went down basically almost $20 from where it was. And now it's come all the way back to scratch. So, I mean, if you're chasing on this in either direction, you got hurt pretty bad here. So, again, the fade trade working even on individual stories here. This one sets up for the fade trade to work even in the regular session, meaning you get that 4 or 5 point pop. Maybe you're taking profits into it. You get a 4 or 5 point drop. Maybe you're playing the dip a little bit. I think fading everything is still working.
All right, let's keep the earnings train ticking. I saw someone in the chat talking about Penn earlier. Penn Entertainment reported this morning and actually trading higher on a not great report. I don't think the bar was set very high, but EPS came in at a negative 79 cents, missed the negative 59 cent estimate. Sales came in at $1.6 billion, missed the $1.62 billion estimate. ESPN Bet integration drags on results, they're saying. The call is supposed to start at 9 a.m., but either way, double miss here, but the stock's edging higher just barely. I have some thoughts on this, but
give
I'll let,
give them, give them.
Yeah.
So I've been like betting on a couple different apps and, you know, trying to take advantage of all the promos and whatnot. The ESPN Bet app, which is ran by Penn, is so much worse than DraftKings and FanDuel. It's incredible because I think a lot of times what you see are like the products that companies put out are all basically the same. But for example, yesterday I was like toying around and just seeing something and I was making like a crazy parlay and it was on ESPN Bet, $25 to win $100,000. That same parlay on DraftKings was $25 to win $500,000. I was like, how is there this big of a discrepancy between the odds on both of these apps when you're betting on the same exact things? And then you look at like there was a lot of problems with the apps too, like bets wouldn't place, this and that. So I think across the board, like consumers are not happy with ESPN Bet and going to competitors. And for that reason, like I like DraftKings long into its report tonight too. On these apps, you have to make a call, you have to make a bet. So that's what I'm going to do with DraftKings and say I like it to the long side. I'm buying calls on it today.
there's the issue here, is, and you've just highlighted it well, is best of breed, worst of breed. There's a reason, you know, DraftKings, you know, has been an outperformer, really, you know, in the last little couple months, or even the last 2 years, really. And Penn has just went the opposite direction.
Oh,
and I mean, it's product, it's everything. We've talked about
Dennis, you're not getting picked off.
Hold on, Dennis. Initial jobless claims came in at 208,000 versus 212,000.
The same parts.
Unit labor cost Q1 4.7% versus the 3.6% estimate. So more labor cost numbers coming in hotter than expected. Trade balance came in basically in line. So this unit labor cost, if that's similar to the number we saw the other day, that's what kind of hit the market. But market's holding up right here, it looks like.
So going back to the Penn talk, I mean, there's, you know, stocks in a clear downtrend. Until this can get above 18 and start to look. I mean, could it pop on a day where they're kind of buying some laggards and they're buying a little bit of everything? Maybe. Does it hold up is the key. Is it, you know, a short squeeze stock? I'm not even sure the short interest in here. It's just the story here.
It's just been
not a good story. They've done a lot of things wrong.
Yeah, the 18 is a big level on the upside. You know, I told you guys that and gals that you know, I never had any of these accounts, dude. And I wanted to hedge a little bit because I was in just a really sweet position in the NCAA finals. And if UConn won, I won. So I was confident they were going to win. I wasn't super confident that I was going to they would cover. So I put a little hedge on, you know, tried to get a little cute. And of course, they didn't cover, but it's just ridiculous. I mean, I still have the app. I moved it to my back page. I mean, all they try and do is you encourage you to make stupid bets and parlays. That's all they do. That's all they do, man. I could care less about that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're good at those things and you're good at playing them, go ahead. I have disabled everything, every communication from them, and somehow they still communicate with me. So.
Well, they're still popping up and saying, bet, yeah. Joel, bet. They know you like betting on everything, at least, you know, on the show.
It's fishing. Whatever. I mean, is Joel Embiid going to have 19 points, you know, by halftime? Like, how the hell do I know that? You know, I mean, they're just enticing people. And the more scandals that happen, the more it's going to weigh on the stock price.
All right. It is 8:32. I see our guest hanging out backstage. Greg, why don't we bring Greg Weldon on for a few minutes early this morning? Let's give him our special pre-market prep welcome and see what Greg has been watching in this crazy market.
Good morning,
hey guys.
How you doing?
Good.
Good, man.
I've been watching as you guys talk about betting sites and how the odds are so wide ranging, and it just kind of tells you, man, if the odds makers can't tighten it up, how are you supposed to bet? I mean, this is the hardest thing to do well, and now it's just proliferated. I think it's a sign of the times in and of itself.
Maybe the answer is to just not do it. That's maybe what I at least
100%. I mean, this, you're talking about one of the hardest things to do well, to make money over time, and to think you can know more than the odds makers, I think is pretty
well. That's why I look at it as like a way, like an entertainment. Like, okay, if I bet $50 on a game tonight and lose it, that's not going to break the bank. When people start gambling because they need to win $500 to pay rent, like that's how you get into problems. If you just look at it as like a little fun thing on the side, and that's why I actually like doing like the parlays and stuff, because I can bet a little amount with the potential to win a lot, and I get the same enjoyment out of that, the same excitement when it looks like I have a chance and then I get rug pulled at the end, rather than putting like $300 on a game and then being pissed when I lose. But let's get
if you're a Knicks fan during the playoffs, is that what you're talking about?
I had money on the Knicks on the game they lost to the Sixers, where they were winning at the end of the game and it looked like the game was over, and then
a rug pulled out from under you. That was pretty
dramatic. Tyrese Maxey, he scored seven points. Yeah, it was amazing.
New Reggie Miller.
Yeah, exactly. Greg, what have you been watching? I mean, these markets in the past, you know, few months, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of people just don't know what's going on. A lot of people are saying, okay, we're going to see a big crash. A lot of people are still bullish. How are you feeling about these markets, and what have you been watching primarily?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is, you know, if you look at even the data, there's something for everyone. You got arguments on the dovish side for the Fed. You got arguments on the hawkish side. You got bullish arguments in stocks. You got bearish arguments in stocks. And you have ammunition for both sides. It's so polarized. What I look at here is the run from 2022 and really the run from last October and the big push here that was led by AI and NVIDIA and all the chip stocks was predicated upon three basic themes, if you will. Number one, we saw in October of last year, the end of Fed funds forward for this year, for end of this year, was almost 5%. It dropped to 380 by January. Clearly, they were pricing at 6 or 7 rate cuts from the Fed this year, which was ludicrous. I mean, absolutely 100% ludicrous.
Yeah.
But that was a bubble here in a Fed easing kind of dynamic. Well, that's gone because the Fed funds for the end of this year hit 519, a new high for the contract just a day before the Fed meeting. So in that context, that one whole theme blown out of the water already. Second theme was AI and chips. And while that's real, and you can see it in the reaction in certain chips, it's a very narrow breadth type of thing. Look at the Russell, didn't even make new highs. When you take that too, you have to take it a couple steps further before that's widely being used in consumer products or, you know, corporate products that are being sold. You have marketing teams selling these kinds of products as opposed to the artificial AI, you know, AI that's not AI that's being marketed by every company already. All right, let's talk about the real AI down the road. It's not mature. So for that to drive the entire stock market, and you could say in and of itself, it's destructive to jobs, much more so than the tech, you know, revolution in the 90s was, where you created a lot of new jobs. I don't see the off, you know, I don't see the balance here with AI. So Greg, to say AI is a driving force that's bullish for stocks may be a little faulty to begin with when you think about how destructive it could be for the labor market.
This
the
is
third
a great
thing
point.
We have kind of is this consumer is healthy, consumer is strong. Well, who's telling us that? Well, the banks are performing pretty well here. The XLF is one of the better performing sectors right now. But it's Discover, it's Capital One, it's Bank of America, it's the credit card companies that are telling us how strong the consumer is. Why? Because earnings, you know, we know wages, basic relative to inflation is flat at best. You know that savings has completely dwindled, all right? You have no savings left. And you have a dynamic now where people are borrowing on their credit cards to pay the bills. I don't see how you call the consumer healthy. Most recent income data, all right, PCE data, showed income was like $106 billion for the month was the increase in income. The increase in spending was $156 billion. You spent 50% more in growth in spending than you had growth in income. Not only that, within the income, 58% of it came from transfers, handouts from the government or entitlements. That's not a healthy consumer at all. In no way, shape, or form do I see the consumer as healthy. And then when you take the XLY consumer discretionary sector and you say, okay, well, retail sales are pretty strong, all right? So we can still have some hope for the consumer. Problem with retail sales, most recent number, $27 billion increase in March over March of last year, $24.2 billion of that was price increase only. You don't have the growth in terms of the volume of sales. People are spending more money buying less stuff, especially in discretionary sectors. The XLY relative to the S&P is back to the pandemic low. How's that a strong consumer? So I could kind of blow away all these bullish theses. And then you have everyone's invested. Everyone owns these stocks that want to own these stocks. And to me, the risk reward here is for some kind of liquidation move to the downside in a corrective fashion.
I mean, we've had the tale of two markets, and that's kind of what you're outlining here. You've had this, you know, raging bull market in certain tech stocks driven by the AI story. And then you've had the IWM, you know, 2,000 small cap stocks here that have really done nothing all year. I mean, we're basically at the same spot we started the year. So, I mean, if you're in the right stocks, you're having a really good year. You're in the wrong stocks, and the value stocks are probably not, you know, doing that well. And maybe your point is, you know, you mentioned a good point just about AI being destructive to jobs. I mean, you can have every small cap stock saying, yeah, we're an AI company, but are they really? You know, are they really, or are they just, you know, saying, oh yeah, we're going to use AI to try to, like, you know, be more efficient, but are you really an AI company? Not like NVIDIA is. So does this continue? Do we continue to see this underperformance? So not talking about an overall sell-off, but do we continue to see this underperformance in, you know, non-tech stocks? Like, let's just say IWM versus the Qs. Do we continue to see that underperformance? Because, heck, well, these IWM, the small caps, don't have a hell of a lot of AI in there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a good question. And I think what we do is look at the market to kind of tell us, because, you know, we do a lot of quant work in addition to all the global macro stuff top down. I want it all to mesh, technical, quant, and fundamental. And when you kind of look at that, just looking at within the market leadership and what has been hot, we had the XLK was the hottest, you know, through into the fall. Then it rotated into energy. You really saw that. What you're seeing now is a rotation into staples, utilities, and energy, even though energy is kind of breaking, I think it's a corrective mode there. And even materials have kind of popped up a little bit. So I think that the market itself is seeing this kind of, you know, first you had the divergence, then you had all the stories that drove the big caps and the, you know, the leaders to the upside has kind of dissipated. It's like, where is the next engine of growth for these stocks? And it's like, well, if you don't have the Fed in play, which they're not, right? We could talk about inflation, which is on the re-raise, you know, re-raise all in here on inflation, really, if you want to look at it. So the Fed, and what I thought, Powell said something interesting yesterday, just to kind of highlight what I'm saying. When he was asked, are you, he said something about being restrictive. And the guy said back to him, you mean sufficiently restrictive? And he goes, well, I would say we are restrictive now and that we will be sufficiently restrictive, but we'll let the data tell us that. And that was telling because the data is re-raising inflation. And that is suggesting that, man, if you you're planning on having the Fed ease and the markets aren't anymore, and that's part of the hiccup here, then you're probably out of luck. And the Fed has done everything they're going to tell us. So where is that push going to come from? And how much upside is there versus the downside risk of a liquidation correction here? The math right now doesn't work. And that applies to almost the entire market. It's hard to find places to hide. Copper has been really strong. The mining shares have been really strong. But even that are wobbling here. And it could be one of these things where there's few places to hide in the very near term when you have a, you know, a significant market correction until you. And I would add, by the way, that the Fed, for me, I've said this all along. The Fed doesn't move until you have disinflation in asset prices. Are they going to really cut rates with gold at $2,000 and the stock market near new highs and tech taking off? No way. The best way for them to secure a victory would be, they want labor market, you know, erosion. To get that, disinflation in asset prices would be the quickest route.
Greg, let's drill down in the commodities, right? As I know you follow those very closely. Very, very important when it comes to inflation. You know, it seems like they all never go in the same direction. You know, crude, oh, we're going 100. No, we're back at 80. Gold had its outsized move. I look at corn and some of the grains there. They've been moving up. Talk to us about the commodities, where you see some potential on the upside and maybe something that's a little overdone.
Yeah, I mean, crude has been a really tough one because you really, it's a polarized market too. You have enough supply globally to satiate the market demand, but it's not readily available. So you've seen the swaps have been real strong and then they come off. And so it's been a frustrating trade. I still like it longer term, but right now it's just too shaky. What we look for in the commodities is simple supply-demand imbalances or the potential for that to develop. And a lot of this right now is around, we're coming out of El Nino, which has been vicious. All right. And now it's talking about like an immediate transition into La Nina. And you don't get these back and forth. You went from La Nina to El Nino, and now you're going to go back real quick. This is part of the science of the planet. One of the things that's happening in the really macro top-down picture of the scientific changes taking place. This puts a lot of different food crops at risk. And the food commodities, to me, have been a place that have been hot. When you look at cocoa, coffee, Robusta coffee, which is, you know, Vietnam. You talk about coca in Ghana. Then you talk about, well, what's the situation around some of these commodities? And soybeans, by the way, you mentioned grains. Corn popped yesterday. Soybeans have been depressed because there's enough supply right now. But the issue is South America, where they're expecting kind of bumper crops. And now the weather is not so good because you still have El Nino. And now you're seeing a little bit of a turn there. So the newest one could be the soybean complex. But what we've seen is in cocoa, especially with Ghana, you take these places longer term, this is an issue. With places like Ghana, where the currency has gotten annihilated, the cedi is the currency of Ghana, it's gotten wasted. How are farmers supposed to keep up with the maintenance of their crops, of their trees, of whatever it might be in these individual commodities? We're seeing this more and more. We think this will be more and more. And there's going to be select opportunities in some of these commodities that we have already played, like cocoa and coffee. And now we see the same thing in some of the base metals, copper, aluminum, zinc, tin. You have very low supplies. One of the issues here is China has been a huge importer. They're hoarding gold. They're hoarding grains. they're hoarding base metals. And when you see the Western inventories of these things are historically low, and all of a sudden prices are coming out of this. And yes, could be at risk if the stocks come down, you have a demand side issue, that could be the risk to some of these commodities. But there's plenty of commodities that are in play now that have real solid supply-demand fundamentals that are indigenous to those particular commodities.
So, Greg, you mentioned, and I love this, that this is kind of the market where there's something for everyone. It doesn't matter your point of view. Mm-hmm. But say you wanted to get maybe you wanted to get a little bullish, or maybe, you know, you just wanted to put some trades out there. What would you be looking at right now as your, like, prime opportunities in this market?
Man, that is a really hard question because they're pretty few and far between. We don't have a lot of positions on right here. And it's not necessarily kind of in stocks. I do believe that the mining shares, particularly in the gold sector, even with this, you have a little wobble here in gold, and I think it corrects down towards 2,200. But I think it's a major buy down here. And I think the mining shares in that sector, some of which have run to new highs, others have completely lagged. So even in that individual sector, it is so polarized. That's why we do a lot of quant work that picks individual stocks. And the stocks that we have chosen in the mining shares have been really strong. The best among them have been the base mining shares. Southern Copper has been the best performer of them all. So we expect those kinds of opportunities to continue. Oh, I like uranium right here a lot. You talk about even starting to see in the U.S. how this is shifting the whole sentiment away from, you know, this nuclear energy being so negative. You want clean energy, and I'm not, you know, necessarily pushing nukes. I'm just saying this is the reality of it. It's the most efficient clean energy beyond wind and solar by far. It's not even close. The number of new nuclear plants for energy being built around the world is through the roof, and the planned numbers, it exceeds 300 in the next 10 years. So in terms of uranium, it's a tightly held commodity that you can play in a number of ways. The NLR is one of the ETFs. The URA, the URNM is the Sprott physical mining shares in uranium. So I think that that's a longer term opportunity. It's still very immature. That still could be jumped on that bandwagon.
All right, Greg Weldon, WeldonOnline.com, really a diverse guy, speculator, author, dad, poker player, philosopher, astronomer, golfer, body surfer, and former b-baller, and also a former floor trader. We did not get a floor trading story out of him today, but we will get you back on a real soon, Greg. Great outlooks on the markets, the commodity markets. Thanks for joining us here on the number one pre-market prep show in the world.
My pleasure, guys. Do a great job. Let's go Rangers.
Ooh. All right, Greg. Thanks for hopping on.
We can meet in the finals. Oilers Rangers finals. I like it.
How's McDavid Connor doing?
We can't talk sports anymore. They're getting mad. The chat got really mad at the only. We only talked Oilers for 2 minutes. He's leading the league in scoring so far. So he's doing well.
And did they have like a 16-game losing streak or something? Didn't they?
16-game winning streak, Joel.
Did they have a big losing streak first?
They started really bad. We can't get this much hockey talk. They're going to kill us. They were worst team in the league in the first 10 games. Tied for San Jose with the worst. It was horrible.
Let's get back to stocks. We did have a few more companies report before the open this morning that we haven't gotten to. Let's go to the pharma space real quick. NVO, Novo Nordisk reported some conference call has concluded already. Okay. I thought it was starting up soon. EPS for Novo Nordisk came in at this is all like, it's not in US dollars, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
It's
this may be not the stock to pick, but we'll just sum it up. It's already been trading in Europe for 5 hours here, so I don't know when the report came out, but price discovery here has already happened, so it's leaking a little bit. I mean, its stock's been running. Is it Bar? Probably. Bar maybe set a little bit high, so I think you can sum it up that way here. I do want to go to Apple here, and not that we want to preview it, but there was actually news that came out that the chat was talking about right before Greg came on there. We had the Washington Post coming out with an article expecting that Cook is going to hint at new AI features. So talking about new AI features, said next week. So, you know, I would assume they meant tonight. But if you read closely, it says next week. And maybe the algos just say new AI features and they buy. And they're like, oh, next week. He isn't going to talk about it tonight. I mean, because Apple reports here tonight. Apple did get a huge pop here, Joel, on this. If we look here just from the trading here overnight
Let me get the pre-market.
Get the pre-market chart up here. You'll see the big pop. We popped up to Is that right? 170.
Over 173.
There's also along that same report from the Wall Street Journal, there's a Financial Times report a few days ago that Apple has poached a bunch of like AI engineers and leaders from Google and other companies. So like it's clear that behind the scenes, and we know that Apple is usually pretty secretive with this kind of stuff. But this reporter at Financial Times, like Doug, and had all these sources, and basically all the people in the AI space, the leading engineers, like all knew this was going on, that Apple was going around and just picking off people from Google, from, you know, I assume OpenAI and whatnot, and building this kind of team of like AI engineers. So Apple, you know, I've been saying that for since Apple has been not seen as like an AI player, be like, look, they might not be the first, but if you think Apple's not going to get into AI at all, or not be a player, then you're crazy. So
they're going to be there
again. Apple reports tonight. I think, you know, the big question right now is just about iPhone sales. You had weakening demand in China and maybe just not the strongest iPhone cycle overall. But I was reading, I forget who it was, but some analyst was going out on a limb and saying that it's setting up well for Apple to have a very strong iPhone cycle the next year. So even if Apple disappoints on earnings tonight, like I'd still be a buyer of it. You know, if it ends up falling from here.
I mean, long-term, Apple has worked for a long time. You know, its valuation that took me out of the stock when it was getting over 30 times earnings. I'm like, I can't stomach it at 30 times earnings. Loved it at 12, 15 times earnings when they were growing earnings like crazy. Now the earnings growth is slowed to almost nothing, yet they pay 30 times. You know, this is what Weldon, you know, Greg was just on talking about. It's a good example of just, you know, we've got a lot of froth, and Apple had a lot of froth, and the froth is coming out of here. Now, again, will the froth go back in? If they give us new AI products like the Washington Post is saying, something cool, not Vision Pro like. I mean, yeah, you know, this could get the big pop back up. I mean, Google turned their sales around just talking, you know, obviously Google back in March, everybody's like, oh man, they're lagging behind. Now they think AI is a leader here. So Apple's probably going to be back eventually. So if you're buying the dip in Apple, you eventually rewarded, probably. But just be careful paying, you know, the valuation. It's not that, you know, cheap.
Yeah, before I talk to technicals on this, I'm going to be at risk of probably pissing everybody off in the chat, and including you guys. But what, you know, what would Steve Jobs think about this whole AI? You know, what would, because the one thing that irks me is it's artificial intelligence. Okay, wasn't like our country, wasn't all these things that we have in this world was because of creativity? People creating new things,
real just intelligence. Not,
yeah, yeah, real intelligence instead of artificial intelligence. I mean, am I just being too old of a fogey here?
No, we're
I'm
not too saying old of fogies.
I'm not saying it's not gonna, you know, revolutionize the world and the industry and this, that, and everything. But it's just, what about creative intelligence? And what if we were able to interview Steve Jobs today? And he came on our show. What do you think he would have to say about this whole AI craze?
I think he'd be right involved, and I think Apple would be the leader. If Steve Jobs was alive today, I think Apple is the leader in AI. I'm not joking. I think they're the leader in AI.
Yeah, and I think
Apple has lagged significantly here because they lost Steve Jobs 10 years ago. Steve Jobs set them up on a path for success. And the stock, you can say, well, the stock's done unbelievably since he's been gone. But all those products were all in place. And I've argued on this show before that the innovation at Apple has lagged since Steve Jobs is gone. You know, he left them stuff in the pipe. Like, he didn't just die and didn't have any ideas on the table. There was stuff, but we're kind of past all that now. And I firmly believe if Steve Jobs was alive today, he would be the leader in AI. Like, it wouldn't even, you know, Apple would be a leader here. So I think, you know, leadership has lacked here. You know, is Tim Cook, you know, been a bad leader? No, but he's not Steve Jobs. He's not the innovator. I mean, Steve Jobs is just such, there's not that many people that come out that just can innovate like that. And they have to be workhorses too. We've talked about the ways, you know, Steve Jobs ran his life. It was work first and everything else second. I mean, as a person, you know, maybe that's not the best way to be, but that's the kind of CEO you want in there. That's the kind of person you want to buy those companies. You know, Musk, same way. Work, you know, and the accomplishments are just, you know, absolutely incredible. You know, people say a lot of negative about Musk, but I mean, unbelievable accomplishments because he works so much and he wants what he wants. You know, he goes after and goes after and he fails. He's not afraid to fail. But eventually, if you keep trying, eventually you do succeed. So I think if Steve Jobs was alive today, I think Apple would be a lot further.
I'm just glad that I don't have kids in school, you know, and I don't have kids that are going to college and stuff, because you comment in the chat here, teachers are literally saying how students can't answer simple questions anymore. They just use all the apps. I see that they're doing it, you know, on the papers and stuff. I mean, that is stymieing the young minds of our country. And that to me is very, very concerning. I mean, when you're, you know, doing your papers, could you imagine how hard it is to be a teacher?
Well, there are also a lot of problems with teachers were having with students coming out of the COVID lockdowns, like kids just their reading levels weren't where they were the 2 years prior and stuff. And that was kind of before ChatGPT had really become like that mainstream. So I think there's a lot of these problems kind of going on at the same time in the educational system. And I'm not an expert there, so I don't want to speak to it too much.
Okay.
But what I was just going to say, Joel, to your question about jobs. So Jobs, like the history of Apple, Jobs was never really the tech wizard, right? You had Wozniak, who was the one who was like making all these revolutionary computers. Jobs was a genius in knowing what the consumer wanted before the consumer even
visionary.
Visionary. He knew what the consumer knew, how to market it, knew how to put it in a pretty package and make everyone want that new, you know, Mac computer, that new MacBook, that new iPod. So I think Jobs' role, if he were alive now and doing this AI, would be figuring out. He wouldn't be like actually coding the AI and make it, you know, doing that. He'd have people doing that, but figuring out here's how consumers are going to want to use AI. Here's how we're going to deliver it to them. So I do think that it would strengthen Apple's like foothold in the AI market through his way of just understanding what consumers want and how people will use these products in the future. As far as Apple's preview for the earnings tonight, I mean, this will be probably, you know, your big market mover after the close. And like I said, I think the bar is set kind of low in terms of iPhone sales and whatnot. We will get some more numbers related to the Vision Pro, which I don't think has been like that big of a smashing success for Apple. But
I think it's been very bad. I think the Vision Pro, you don't even hear anything about it on the news. I don't even see it advertised to me. I mean, I think this rollout of the Vision Pro has actually been a failure.
Yeah, and I think we'll see more. We'll get some more color on that tonight, and know from we'll see more. I think a lot of times we'll break down the earnings of a stock at like the day after they report, and then not really go back and visit it after a few days to see the reaction. But I just saw some people in the chat earlier talking about Snap. Snap after its report last week has now, I mean, it's gone up 40% from its lows a month ago. And Joel, I was just looking at the chart, and the chart looks pretty interesting to me, like a little cup and handle here. Uh-huh. And I was curious to see what you saw in the Snap chart, and looking at it here. Because I actually like, you know, with all the TikTok ban going on and everything, and I still know a lot of people using Snap. So I mean, this stock's interesting to me, but if you're going to tell me, no, the chart's not setting up well.
Well, it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, absolutely in the middle of nowhere, but it's had the gap and go. And
filling the gap.
Well, there's a gap. Well, there's a gap here, and then there's
a gap into a gap.
Yeah, gapped into a gap. So I say
the evil Knievel.
Well, when we looked at this before, in the shorter term charts, 15 was a number, and then it cleared that 2 days ago. So I'd say there's room up here, up to fill the gaps. Not that far away, 1677. And then the next high after that was at 1750. But it had a good report, and then they got excited on the PINS report too. We didn't even cover that yesterday. So I mean, with these kind of moves, and what if you observed over the year, when they have these gap of goals and then they hold that gap low, then man, it's hard to fight it. They will usually go up to, in this instance, it's filling the next resistance area, and that would be filling the gap. So good to go on the upside. I just don't know where your risk is on the downside if you're playing this. I mean, I wouldn't want to play it down to 15 again, because that's not even a 1-to-1 ratio. Wow, 15 was yesterday's low, 1493. So yeah, let's get through yesterday's high and fill that gap. 1677. S&P's leaking just a little bit here. We did go up and kiss 5090. We had some 830 numbers. We moved around a little bit, but looks like another choppy session.
I think you're going to have chop involved here. I would be careful. I mean, I would be careful on the short squeeze stocks. Let's say it here again here. Carvana continues to go higher here. We obviously, you know, even looking at Snapchat, you know, the gap and go there. A lot of people think Carvana is just going to open and tank, and it very well might. But I would have this on my screen if you're trading any of those higher short squeeze stocks, because this was one of those names at one time. And it does get them all excited over on the Reddit boards when you see a stock going up like this. And we know they sometimes have a day. And you know what? If there's ever going to be a day for some of these short squeeze stocks and these memester stocks, it's going to be today. So just be careful. Like a Peloton comes to mind here. You know, the stock has obviously been an epic disaster. You're up 10%. You know, somebody's just saying, you know, do we short this thing? Does it come right back down to 3? I'd be careful on this day. On a normal day, I would say yes. But with Carvana up as much as it is, that's the kind of stock that they could just grab and, you know, take it up to 4. And you're like, what the hell just happened? You know, is Peloton still going down and going bankrupt? That's what I've predicted on this show for a very long time. I believe so. But that path is not always smooth here. So I'd be careful just randomly shorting, you know, some of these higher short squeeze names.
Yeah, and we'll see if some of those other ones get wrapped up in there. You know, you mentioned AMC, GameStop. Should be a good day of trading today. Again, let me just
Try to buy some of those stocks actually on the open, just trying to play it.
Yeah, why not? Just before we wrap up real quick, it is 9
short leash, though. Very, very short leash.
It is 9 a.m. Here's the full scope of what we've got going on this afternoon. Apple, Coinbase, which we didn't even get to the crypto markets in Coinbase today. DraftKings, Cloudflare, Bill.com, Expedia, Amgen, Booking Holdings, and Square. We did the initial jobless claims at 10 a.m. You have factory orders, but don't think that will really be moving markets tomorrow. You have a U.S. employment report, hourly wages year over year. Yep, jobs report will be huge. And then before the open, you got Hershey, Fubo, XPO, CBOE, and Chenier. So not huge
it's
earnings.
Tonight, so many companies. So obviously, we see Apple and Coinbase and DraftKings. And, you know, they've got all the big ones up there. Benzinga does a really good job of showing you the big ones there. Going to be a lot of reports to watch tonight. This is kind of, this week was the heart of earnings season. This was really the heart.
Games, yep.
I mean, I think we start to go into, you know, a little, it's still going to be a lot of companies reporting next week, but you don't have those huge, you know, Apples and Amazons and, you know, those names that we know drive the entire market. We don't see that next week.
All right. Well, good show today, guys. Thank you to Greg Weldon for joining us. It is 9:02 a.m. Dennis, we know you're still thinking fade today, some more chop. My only call for today, and I'm buying DraftKings calls. Just know that it's like a thing on DraftKings. It's a bet. It's what it is. But I might look at some calls later this afternoon.
Being long stocks ahead of the reports is often a good idea here too. And you're rewarded here again if you bought the DraftKings even yesterday at the close, which I did. Yeah, I've already actually sold it here. You're already.
No, if I'm buying the calls, Dennis, I need you to buy the stock back. I can't have anyone selling. I need to have zero.
Buy those calls 2 days before the stocks report.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you all a tip. Buy them 2 days, 2 or 3 days before they report, especially when you're in choppy markets or bull markets. That strategy is one of my core strategies, just owning stocks ahead of reports and then selling them before the report. I've made a lot of money over the years with that strategy. It's a stupid, simplistic strategy that just works.
Triple D, Gabe Fabe is asking if we're going to do the closing print this afternoon on premarketprep.com. Yeah, I know you have that on your calendar, so I don't have to test it.
Yeah, we'll be in
there. We'll be doing that. Sure. We'll be wrapping up all the action tomorrow. Mish Snyder from Market Gauge is going to give us an update on the Modern Family and her looks at the market. So everyone, buckle up for another session. Thanks for the good input, and thanks for that Alexander Hamilton that was thrown into the chat. And everyone have a good day. Back with you tomorrow morning.